Well, let me welcome back Kevin Lucco. And Kevin, before we dive into stuff that's gone on with the team, let's just take a moment to talk about Friday night, quite an incident in Coralville where a tornado hit. The team was out of town, but still the city took a little bit of damage out there. And I think it's important that we recognize that there is things going on in the world a little bit beyond sports.
As someone that's like a state away, you still find yourself laser focused when you, I mean, granted, you're living in the middle of everything, but me as an outsider, you can't help but to pay a little extra attention to it when it's happening to an area which you're somewhat familiar with and you're somewhat focused on. And it was quite a rough afternoon into evening as Coralville did get hit with tornadoes, and it affected a lot of stuff that night sports-wise. You had cancellations in Cedar Rapids and Dubuque for USHL games, and a game in the AHL with Rockford and Laval got delayed for half an hour because he sent all the fans to the lower bowels of the stadium as the storm system passed through Rockford. So it was quite an eventful night on Friday. It was good to see a picture yesterday of the players from the Iowa Heartlanders pitching in to help with the cleanup efforts in Coralville. So hope all is well down there, and they're good people down there. They'll bounce back from this for sure.
Well, let's stay with the Heartlanders for a moment, Kevin. Through the first 20 road games for this club, they could not buy a victory. I think it was like the first 30 road games for this team. They could not buy a victory. Now, go on the road, three games and three nights in three different cities. They sweep that weekend. What a fantastic performance by this team.
It was really encouraging to see, as a fan and as, someone that's been following what's been a rough season. And I'm just trying to put my finger on how this is happening. And what I got out of it is that the Heartlanders have went out and picked up so many guys that were playing college hockey and just some getting out of school. Like guys are just playing college playoff games like 2 weeks ago. Now they're playing professional hockey. Well, within that, these guys don't know how bad the team was on the road all year. It didn't matter to them. It was like almost with all the new blood in there, kind of within that came a new mentality. And, and as a team that doesn't have any playoff aspirations, they just played loose, had fun, and before you know it, they took three games in 3 days. And some of those college guys they may have played three games in 3 days in their respective collegiate league playoffs, so they weren't even fazed by having to play a third game in 3 days.
Well, let's start with Friday night. Kevin, a huge 3-1 victory over Toledo. Toledo was one of the hottest teams in the ECHL for about a month and a half. They've scored first in this game, but Iowa just continually battled back, starting with Tommy Perrottino making a great play to intercept the pass and create a goal, 1:17 into the second. They score right after that is Marek Korenchek, I believe is the way that is said, scored his first goal since joining the club. Jake Derfinger adds a goal late in that contest. But let's talk about Hunter Jones, Kevin. 32 saves in this game. Man, he is really looking like he's living up to those aspirations the organization had for him.
Yeah, a big second period for him, stopping all 18 shots as Iowa was outshot 18-11, but yet outscored Toledo 2-0. But a big performance by Jones, and, I imagine the big club has to be happy with the way that Jones is ending his second full season in minor league hockey.
Well, he was not satisfied with that, Kevin. He comes back after a little road trip the team has to take to get to Kalamazoo, Michigan for Saturday night's game. A 4-1 victory for this club. Jones with another huge night, 31 saves in the game. And, one of the things that I have noticed about him over the years, Kevin, has been when things were kind of not going his way, you could sort of sense that in his demeanor on the ice. I feel like he's a young guy, and you know, maybe he's reaching that level of maturity where he's able to shake stuff off.
It could be, and, you know, it comes with experience, too, that, you know, you are able to bounce back from giving up a goal, and we just seen it happen with him where it seemed like when he gave up goals, they were in bunches, and, you know, he would be sitting along just nice in the game, and then all of a sudden, bam, 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 there's three popped in, and everything was off the rails. So, could be a chance that we are seeing some maturity in Hunter's game.
This was a scoreless game to the first. Carson Denomi winds up scoring in the second to put the team on top. Iowa responds with three unanswered goals, what they had. After Denomi scores, Jesse Josh gets his second of the season. Louis Boudon gets his first goal, a shorthanded tally for the club, with a little over 3 minutes left in the third period. Kalamazoo finally breaks the shutout, but Jake Durfinger with his second goal in as many nights clinches the victory for the team. On Sunday, Mitch Benson gets the start and earns his first victory in the ECHL as Fort Wayne jumps out to a 4-1 lead, only to watch Iowa battle back in this contest and 4-2 lead. I'm sorry, battle back with three goals in the final 7 minutes of this game to wind up winning. And man, talk about just a complete turnaround for this club. Jake Durfling there with two more goals in that game, including the game winner. Oh man, this guy, I've been wondering where he's coming from. And it just all of a sudden the offensive scoring punch is there for him.
You know, it's just a matter, you know, guy gets hot and, you know, the goals will come in bunches. And just, you know, I got to get back to that mentality again of a lot of these young guys coming in unfazed by their surroundings. You know, as we're going through the three games over the weekend, I'm noticing the crowd is like over 7,000 on Friday night and, you know, 3,800 in Kalamazoo on Saturday and around 7,000 in Fort Wayne on Sunday. But some of these college hockey players, they played in front of those kind of crowds almost all the time, and they're not fazed by it. They're not scared by it, and it showed as they were able to bounce back from 4-2 deficit to take a win out of Fort Wayne.
Well, a nice 6-point week for them puts them 3 points behind Wheeling now for 7th place in the division, 4 behind Kalamazoo for 5th place in this division as they reach the 20-win mark, 20-33-14. Kevin, big week as they travel to Wheeling on Friday, a place where they've had a lot of success recently, and then take on Indy, a team that I believe, I'm going to look at this here, looks like they're pretty much locked into the number 3 spot. They have 5 games left. They need all 10 points for Toledo to lose all of those games for them to surpass Toledo. That's clearly not going to happen. So maybe that you take on an India team that doesn't see, you know, any sense of urgency because they're just trying to stay healthy and get ready for the playoffs. This is another weekend that the team could come away with 4 points.
It's a minor goal, but granted, Kalamazoo has a game in hand, but if the Heartlanders could win like 4 out of the last 5, who's to say that maybe they couldn't catch Kalamazoo and Wheeling and end up in 5th place, which would be a huge feather in their cap considering where they were earlier in the season.
Absolutely. So we'll be watching that closely. Well, let's jump up to the Iowa Wild this week, a series that you were down there to watch against the San Diego Gulls. So pick us up Friday night here, Kevin.
Well, Saturday night, well, it was a Saturday-Sunday series.
Oh, Saturday. I'm sorry. You're right. Yeah, Saturday. My apologies.
Saturday was a very, it seemed like the first period was, it just was not a lot of action to it. It seemed like there was should not have been a feeling out process because these teams just faced each other in San Diego recently, but a pretty lazy first period, but Iowa finally cracks the scoreboard at 18-27 with Joe Hickett's tally as he bounced in on a rebound from the point and blew it past Gage Alexander for his sixth of the year. Second period, Glenn Godden ties it up at one on the power play, was left open in the middle of the slot and buried a shot past Jesper Wallstedt. But Iowa comes back. Stephen Fogarty gets a nice feed in the center of the slot. And Nick Sweeney somehow got a piece of it to give Iowa a 2-1 lead. Then the turning point of the game, I thought, was the two consecutive penalties by San Diego that put Iowa on a two-man advantage. And Nick Batan makes him pay with two power play goals pretty much from the same spot on the ice to make it a 4-1 game going into the third period. And it was pretty pedestrian third period, but Mitchell Balmes, who was elevated to the second line with all the injuries right now in the Iowa lineup, gets his second goal of the year with assists from Damian Hunt and Marco Rossi. It was a game that Iowa needed to win. They're still in a tight playoff chase with Rockford. And after the lazy start, Iowa outshot them 22-11 in the last two periods. And it was a good win for the home team.
4 points for Nick Batan on that night, Kevin. Three assists for Marco Rossi. You require your stars to really come up with big performances, especially at this time of the season where you're just trying to get yourself locked into a playoff spot. It looks like the guys they need to depend upon are coming through for them.
That was a sneaky three assists for Rossi because I don't know. He was centering a second line with Mitchell Balmes, and I forget who the other winger was on that line, Michael Milne. So it wasn't a best setup for Rossi to have a big night, as he didn't have much scoring on either side of him, but he was in the right spot on both of the power play goals for Patan, getting the helpers on that, and then the helper on the Mitchell Balmes third period goal. But boy, big night for Nick Batan, and he got honored as the AHL third starter of the night for his two-goal, two-assist performance.
Sunday, things do not go as well, Kevin. San Diego battles back to pull out this game.
You know, it was as satisfied as you were with the performance on Saturday night. I thought Sunday was bit disappointing. Things looked good after the first period, after which it seemed Iowa dominated the first period in the shot column and got a couple goals as Nick Sweeney potted his 15th of the year. Glenn Godden once again scored, getting his 16th of the year to tie the game up, but Simon Johansson with a shot from the point somehow fouled in the back of the net, and you know, I'm just looking at this now, and you know, I was covering the game, and I don't know when this happened, but I see the goal that I thought Ryan O'Rourke got, which would have been his first since May of 2021, did end up getting switched to Nick Sweeney's goal. I don't know when that happened, because when I wrote the story for it, it was Ryan O'Rourke's goal. So I look at the box score here, I'm a little kind of thrown off by that. But there was a lot of traffic in front of the net, and I was really surprised when O'Rourke did get credited for the goal. But that goal came from a shot from the point, and another shot from the point from Simon Johansson found the back of the net. And Iowa went up 2-1, and you felt pretty good about it. But the goals kind of lulled Iowa into a real slow sort of defensive game in the last two periods. They just really slowed down Iowa's attack. And on a second 2-on-1 on a power play, Chase DeLeo cashes in on a setup from Michael Delzato to tie the game at 2. Then Benoit Olivier Gruel gets what would end up being the game-winning goal with 8:58 in the second period. So you're thinking, I was down 3-2 going to the third. I was had their number all year. You're thinking, okay, this is going to, they'll find a way to get it done. But in the third period, once again, San Diego's defense just really stopped any sort of attack that Iowa had. Iowa outshot San Diego in the third period, but it was only 5-3, and it just, Iowa just never really seemed to have that big sustained zone time to try to tie the game up. Finally, Olivier Gruel gets his, Benoit Olivier Gruel gets his second goal of the game, an empty netter with 1:33 to go, and tough loss for Iowa on home ice, a game which you got to be pretty disappointed with because they were on the tails of the Manitoba Moose for third place, but they left a valuable 2 points on the table.
You know, a couple of things stood out for me this weekend, Kevin. First of all, San Diego has 2 goals on the power play and a shorthanded goal. Any concern in what you saw about the special teams play about this club?
I would say, you know, the power play did get the job done with the 2 power play goals to turn the game around on Saturday night, but I just didn't see anything about the power play that stood out to me on Sunday. I feel like, you know, the shorthanded goal they gave up to tie the game in the second period may have completely turned the game around, but the San Diego also didn't give them many chances to go on the power play with Iowa only getting 2 opportunities on Sunday.
Also looking at Kevin, 32 total shots they held San Diego over the weekend. I mean, that's a phenomenal defensive performance, but they still wind up giving 4 goals out of those 32 shots. Zane McIntyre gave up 3 goals on 13 shots on Sunday. Do you feel that Walstead came out of this playoff time against Rockford? Is he the guy in net?
I wouldn't say that. I felt like none of the goals that McIntyre gave up, I didn't think were ones that he felt like he should have had back. They were all, you know, the first goals on a 2-on-1 break, and I believe the other two were, I think one came off of a turnover, and then the other one was one right from the slot, too, so... You know, sometimes I think the shots, the goals given up to shots on goal can be a little deceiving. It's how big of a scoring opportunity it was when you gave up the goal. I think that matters. You know, a guy could stop 32 out of 33 shots, but if 20 of them are from the perimeter and relatively harmless, it just makes the stats look a little better. So, yeah, I think you got to go more by, you know, you and I aren't the most savvy when it comes to analytics when it comes to hockey, but I think in this case I think there is something to it when you compute how dangerous the opportunities were and how the goals were scored if they were off of a situation where a guy's left alone in the slot or a goalie didn't have a chance on the play.
Well, Iowa enters the week, Kevin, in fourth place, 32-25-10. They are currently 3 points ahead of Rockford. They have played one more game than Rockford, but right now at the season, even if Rockford were to get 2 points, that would still put Iowa ahead of them in terms of that fourth place. But they take on a Chicago club in a home-and-home series, Kevin, that is 30-28-7 for the Wolves this year. But, man, they have sure had the Wild number over the last few months, and these are clearly not gimme games for this team.
They're not, and you know, Chicago's still in the thick of the playoff chase, too. They're only 4 points behind Rockford with a game in hand. So I think if Iowa can win one of the 2 games, I think you put Chicago in your rearview mirror. But, you know, if Chicago wins them both, now they're 3 games behind them. And they would have 2 games in hand. So, they, you know, once again, 2 very big games for Iowa. You hope that they'll have Sammy Walker and or Adam Beckman back for those games because I just felt like I felt like it was a kind of a one-line team over the weekend with Fogarty, Patan, and Sweeney. And, even late in the game on Sunday, they did move Rossi up to the top line and just kind of put all their eggs in one basket with that. But, when you lose two 20-plus goal scorers from your lineup, it's tough to pick up that slack. And I just felt like Iowa just didn't have the forward depth that they needed over the weekend. Even if they did get five goals on Saturday night, you just kind of felt like if Patan, Fogarty, Sweeney weren't on the ice, there's probably not much going on.
Well, let's jump up to the big club. Last week when Kevin and I were recording the show, Minnesota came in with a 5-1 victory over Seattle and then got a 4-2 victory over Colorado in Denver. Huge start to the week. Kevin, that helped this club to lock in a playoff spot. So first of all, let's just talk about now you're just playing for fighting for playoff position, but you can kind of settle in and say, hey, look, we know we're in the big dance right now.
There is a little bit of solace to be taken in that, but there's still a ton to play for as the Wild are still in a battle with Dallas and Colorado for that first place position in the division, which, the way the NHL this year, even if you win the division and you're taking on a wild card team, you're still going to be playing a heck of a hockey team because this conference right now is just so balanced and so many teams on about the same level. So, every game matters. And right now, even though Colorado's in third place, but they got two games in hand on Minnesota and Dallas, I just have a hunch Colorado's going to end up in the top spot in the division, and I think we're going to see a Dallas-Minnesota matchup in the playoffs. But, the Wild, as your question pertained to, there still is a lot to play for, and that top spot in the division is within reach. Dallas and Colorado both have easier schedules than Minnesota, but, go out and play the games and try to rack up some wins and get some momentum going into the playoffs and maybe win a division title. So I don't think you can really lay back and rest too much.
As you and I were talking last week, Matt Boldy with the natural hat trick for Minnesota, reaching 28 goals this season. Then they go to Denver, Kevin. Let's talk about this game, because I think that this was an incredibly impressive performance, that even if you don't wind up coming away with the top record in this division, you can go to Denver and come away with a big victory now.
Yeah, I thought that was just a huge win for Minnesota to go out there and match up really well with the Avalanche, even if like the third period, it seemed like the third period was like a 20-minute penalty kill. It seemed like Minnesota was pretty content to try to just hang on to a 2-goal lead, and boy, it got dicey. But it was big to come out of there with 2 points, and if the Avalanche are the team you play in the first round, I think it gives you a little bit of confidence.
What about Frederick Gaudreau, Kevin, with two shorthanded goals in that game?
Well, granted, the last one was an empty netter, but boy, what a, it was a beautiful shorthanded goal to give Minnesota the 2-goal cushion. Just showing his speed on the breakaway after a feeding pass in his own zone from Jonas Brodin. But then you have the unassisted empty net goal at the end where he just dead-eyed it from his own end. It was just a huge relief for Minnesota as they were fighting off a pretty furious Colorado attack.
Well, they come away with those 2 big points, then travel on to Vegas, a tough night, losing 4-1 to the Golden Knights. Boldy again, 29th goal of the season, scores in the first period, 5 minutes into the game to put the club on top. Then it was all Vegas after that, Kevin.
Tough night for Minnesota. I think the tone may have been set in a negative way in the first period when Mason Shaw went down awkwardly in his own zone and right away knew something major had happened to his knee. And the fears were realized on Monday as we found out that Mason Shaw is now going to have to deal with a fourth torn ACL in one of his knees, the second time, I believe, in his right knee. And you got to wonder, a heart and soul player like that for Minnesota going down like that, you just wonder if that ended up being a distraction for the rest of the game, because Minnesota just did not play a good game. Vegas just had way too many good opportunities from the center of the ice. Minnesota just was not protecting their zone like they were accustomed to doing on this big streak that they've been on since the All-Star break.
So they dropped that, come back on Monday night, a game that you were at. Vegas scores first in that contest, but Minnesota battles back, creates one-goal advantages for themselves through much of this contest until Vegas is able to tie the game up at 3 in the third period with just a very short amount of time, 35 seconds left in that game. Then they wind up winning in a shootout, Kevin. Very disappointing. You feel like you kind of gave away 2 points, I would think.
I think so, and it seemed like the Minnesota came out strong, but then a minor penalty by Sam Steele set the Wild back. Vegas didn't score on the power play, but it just seemed like the momentum turned around into Vegas's favor. And Golden Knights held a 1-0 lead going into the second, but then Brandon Duhaime gets a nice feed from Ryan Reeves, breaks into the zone, and scores his 9th goal on just a well-placed shot in the upper corner to tie the game. And it was gave Minnesota some life. John Klingberg gets his 10th of the year on a power play. And, you know, this is where a guy like Klingberg can make a difference on the power play, because when he got the puck at the blue line, he just didn't, like, just immediately shoot. He's a veteran. He found where he could get the puck through the slot. Vegas is a really good team when it comes to blocking shots, so he knew that. But just found a spot where he could pick the upper corner, and he did so to give Minnesota a lead. Then after Vegas ties it, Matt Boldy gives Minnesota a lead on a nice rush with Joel Eriksson feeding him for a goal to make it 3-2. But, boy, it was a scramble at the end, and Minnesota just left a guy open in the slot, and Vegas ends up tying the game and then ends up taking the shootout. But the game had a playoff feel to it, and you just wonder if it was a playoff game, you know, it would have been a pretty darn good overtime. So I get it, it's regular season, you know, you can't just go let them play, but you left the arena wondering, what if this would have been a playoff game, and it would have gone in overtime. Who would have won?
Matt Boldy, that 30th goal of the year. You know, we got to see him come up and play, be a big factor for the Iowa Wild last year. He was kind of in no man's land, I guess, for a little bit this season. But I guess if there's a silver lining to the Kaprizov injury, Kevin, it looks like Boldy has been given an opportunity to shine, and he's taken advantage of that.
And I think the acquisition that flies under the radar was of Marcus Johansson, because since Johansson's joined that line with Boldy and Eriksson Ek, that's when Boldy just took off. At Johansson just adds that element of speed to the line, and a good passer, good playmaker, and Boldy has been the benefactor of that, and, you know, his confidence right now has got to be at an all-time high. So it's it'll be good to get Kaprizov back. He is back skating again, and talk is he might play the last 3 games of the regular season. And if they can get that line going again with Matt Harbin and Matt Zuccarello has struggled mightily without Kaprizov. But if you can get that line going, and then you got another good line with Eriksson Ek, Johansson, and Boldy, it'll be a real nice thing for the playoffs to have 2 lines going really well. I think it was a blow to the 4th line for Mason Shaw to have his season ended, but they put Brandon Duhaime down in the 4th line, and right away, you know, Duhaime and Connor Dewar know each other well from their AHL days, and Ryan Reeves is been a good addition to the fourth line. So you had a good fourth line there, and then you know, try to get something out of your third line. You know, maybe this could be a Minnesota team finally that can get out of the first round.
Well, Kevin, this is an interesting last 2 weeks to the season, and you're going to go to Pittsburgh on Thursday. That's never an easy place to play. Then you have St. Louis coming. They're a little bit depleted since the couple of trades they made near the trade deadline, but still, it's St. Louis, and Minnesota struggles against them. Then travel to Chicago, come home against Winnipeg, back to Nashville. I find away, home, away, home, away to be an interesting end of the season here, and I wonder that, man, you got to have some jet lag to some of that, I would think.
It is a little bit odd, but when you look at the flights, the only big flight you're really taking is out to Pittsburgh, you know, and Nashville's just going to be your last game of the regular season. After that one, you're not playing again to the playoffs anyway. But in Chicago, obviously, that's just pretty much a puddle jumper too. So it's not like they're going out to the West Coast a couple of times. So it's not that bad. But, you're right, it is kind of interesting, the home away sort of setup. But in those games, Pittsburgh's going to be fighting for a playoff spot, so that's always been a tough place for Minnesota to win at. St. Louis, they've been a weird team. Saturday night, last Saturday afternoon, they went to Nashville and absolutely got their doors blown off by the Predators, but then they go home and they take the Boston Bruins to a shootout, so you just don't know what you're going to get out of the Blues. Chicago seems to be destined to want to have the best chances of landing Connor Bedard, so maybe you get an easier win on Monday, but then Winnipeg could be fighting for a playoff spot on Tuesday when they come to St. Paul. So, and same thing with Nashville next Thursday night. So you're right, it's going to be a battle for Minnesota, and that's why I think they're likely going to end up either in second or third place in the Central Division, because that's quite a gauntlet to try to go through, and the teams that are right around you both have pretty easy schedules.
Well, let's say that's the case. So you're facing Dallas in the first round, if that's the way that should work out. How do you feel about that matchup for this team?
I think it's doable. It's not ideal. Dallas is a very tough team, very good team, a team that can score goals in bunches. But when you look at the matchups with Minnesota and Dallas all year, pretty much they were all tight affairs. So I think Minnesota has shown that they can play with the stars. So it should be I think as a Wild fan, you hold some hope that you can actually get a playoff series win. It's going to be tough, but I think it's doable.
Here, I think, would be kind of fun about this too, Kevin. So let's say that scenario works out. Then let's say that Iowa knocks off Rockford in the first round. They wind up facing each other in that first round. They would be taking on Texas. And that's an interesting, your AHL and NHL clubs battling against each other.
And I was just talking to somebody about that too, about how I wish the AHL and NHL could somehow mimic each other, just as the way where the affiliates are set up, where all the Central Division teams, all their minor league teams, AHL teams would also be in the same division, because I think it just adds a little spice, when these players come up from the minor leagues and you're playing against, let's say you're playing in Chicago, well, you might have a rivalry with somebody on Chicago that you had a rivalry with when they played for Rockford. So I wish that was set up a little better, where you can maintain those rivalries all the way from the AHL to the NHL. It just seems weird. You got Carolina with an affiliate in Chicago, but St. Louis's affiliate is in Springfield, Massachusetts. It just doesn't make sense. You would think that St. Louis would have their minor league team back in Chicago, and then maybe Springfield, Mass. Would be a spot for the Hurricanes to have their AHL affiliate. But it's not the way it works out, but boy, you know, in an ideal world, I wish it was.
And you know, for fans out there who say, well, that's just the way minor leagues work, keep in mind that the ECHL gave up all of their West Coast teams to the AHL so that they could have their AHL affiliates close to Anaheim and Vancouver and Los Angeles and things like that. So, you know, it wouldn't be unheard of for them to make moves like that that ensured that AHL affiliates were matched more closely with where their NHL team was at.
I mean, granted, to pull that off, you know, then you would Iowa would have a division meet in Colorado and in Arizona. So, you know, you do get a little geographically spread out that way. So maybe it's not going to work out in that point where AHL is trying to minimize travel by putting all the teams in the Mountain Pacific time zone in the same division. But in an ideal world, yeah.
I like the idea. Well, Kevin, man, 2 weeks left in the regular season. So I know you have we're going to get almost gold from you this week because I know I'm going to get great stuff and even better one next week. So what are we going to close out the show with this week?
I don't know what it is with this hockey season, but I don't know if it's just how close all the teams are together, but it's just been so easy to get locked into hockey this year. And I know, especially for me, going down to Iowa and covering the games for Minor League Sports Report this weekend and listening to games on the radio or on the, you know, through satellite radio, going all the way down, all the way back. It's just, for me, it's been a really fun hockey season. I just can't wait for the playoffs to start because, you know, I think all up and down the playoffs, you're just going to have some really dynamite series. And I just think right now it's just a really good time to be an NHL fan.
I think that's a great final thought for us. Kevin Lukow, thanks for joining me this week.
My pleasure.